Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Larimer, today joined by Chris Hutton. Chris, how are you doing?
Hi, Nick. Hi, John. Doing well, thank you. Looking forward to our conversation today.
Indeed. And we also have John Endres. John, how are you doing?
All good. Thanks, Nick. And thanks for having me back on.
Always good to have you guys back. Right, let's get stuck into the news, and I guess we're going to talk a little bit about a theme of accountability. So my least favorite former mayor in the country, Kabelo Gwamanda, has been placed on special leave. Now, we're not going to discuss this in detail, but what's funny is, so he's been placed on special leave. His political party, Al Jamaha, says that they are not going to do disciplinary action against him, despite the fact that he's been arrested on allegations of defrauding people in 2012. However, it also seems now as though, so while he's on special leave, he's getting his full pay and benefits as an MMC, which is about the same as an MP gets in Parliament. It's about just over R1 million per year. However, it seems as though the city of Johannesburg may have made a mistake, and that in fact, he was not legally eligible to be placed on special leave, which is kind of embarrassing. I just thought that worth mentioning at the beginning. But on a similar theme, let's talk a little bit about what's going on with the Social Security Agency of South Africa. So millions of South Africans depend on SASSA grants. That's the Social Security of South Africa grants to get through the month, to survive. These include things like pensions. These include things like child grants, disability grants. But the most important one in recent years has been the very small, just around 350 Rand, social relief of distress grant, which was introduced in COVID to basically look after people who are supposed to be staying at home. It's kind of now turning into something like a universal basic income grant, or at least that seems to be the direction the ANC wants to push it in. A number of first-year computer students from, I think they were from Stellenbosch University, put out a thing in the media recently that they had been playing around basically with this website that SASSA uses for grants, and they had found a number of big security vulnerabilities in the infrastructure, but also found that it was very likely significant amounts of fraud going on with these social relief of distress grants, and that, you know, for example, that there were unusually high numbers of people who said that they had never applied for this grant, and yet applications in their names had been entered into the system, suggesting that someone was fraudulently doing that on their behalf. These two students were then invited before a parliamentary committee to discuss their findings when they sort of just talked a little bit about what had happened. And somewhat shamefully, a number of ANC MPs on the committee decided, rather than with dealing with the allegations, to attack the students, kind of implying that they had nefarious agendas. ANC MP ANC MP on the committee, MP Tolashe, attacked them, saying that these were just allegations, that this wasn't a technical proof, that this was all just media reporting. Another ANC MP said that allegations remain allegations until they are proven otherwise. Let me deal with this myth of these two students with regard to eligibility for the SRD grant. Maybe before I could do that, let me dismiss the absurd barrage of propaganda. In fact, the myth of the two students' qualifications for social grants and those who prematurely call for the minister's recognition with no basis. That MP then went on to claim that one of them had a father who worked in cybersecurity networking and kind of implied that this was the real reason that they were trying to do this, is maybe they were trying to angle for some sort of contract. And the other one worked for the DA-controlled Western Cape government and therefore could not be trusted because they were presumably, an agent of the DA or something. The two students were backed by the DA. They were also backed by the EFF. And Action SA on the committee, who said that, you know, these students had done some excellent research and reporting that had brought to light what was very obviously a big problem with the SASSA system. Of course, what's also sort of awkward about all of this is that SASSA itself doesn't seem to deny that there is, in fact, quite a bit of fraud going on with their system. John, let me start with you. What do you make of this story? It's kind of a bit shameful that you have two kids who've done, well, not kids, but, you know, young adults who have done something really, you know, useful for the public knowledge, putting forward some information, information that seems kind of difficult to actually argue with. I mean, the fact that they, you know, there was all these people who had never applied for grants who apparently were in the system as having applied for them. That seems like a pretty big indicator that something is wrong. And then just being attacked in Parliament, being kind of implied that they are part of some agenda. What do you make of all this?
I think I'll start with a tangential observation from the News 24 piece, which you shared with us, which we discussed before the show. And what I found interesting about it is that the journalist writing here sort of allows a bit of the impatience and frustration with the ANC to filter through what he writes. And I think this is a bit of a change from maybe the way things used to be before the GNU, where the ANC was treated with a lot more respect than now. And one of the things that Jan Gerber, the journalist of, who wrote this piece, says is that responding to the allegations in a way the party previously responded to corruption and fraud allegations in Parliament. So he's saying the same old, same old. This is meant to be the GNU age, but yet the ANC does what it always does. It says the claims are just allegations, as you pointed out, and it doesn't want to do anything about this until somebody else investigates it first and comes and presents their results, and then goes and attacks the whistleblowers, which is also part of a well-developed strategy. And then another place where his frustration bleeds through is where he says, on Thursday, during a debate on corruption and fraud at SASA, one ANC MP, Tsilitsi Munyai, embarked on a tirade that often seemed to teeter on the brink of incomprehensibility. So clearly that MP must have been really worked up. I think the journalist found it hard to make sense of what they were going on about. But nonetheless, these are allegations. That's certainly true. But they seem to be founded in some evidence, some research.
Yeah, okay. Can I make a point on that, which is that, you know, when you're a parliamentary committee that's supposed to discuss these issues, this isn't proving guilt or innocence in a court of law or having to send anyone to jail. The standard here is not beyond a reasonable doubt. The standard here is there some credible evidence? Let's look into this some more. Let's ask some questions. Not like this legalistic circling of the wagons nonsense. And you see this all the time in public life where sort of court rules are applied to broader discussions in society, which is not an appropriate thing to do.
Yeah, that's a great point, Nick. And I think also maybe this is a sign that this sort of instant defensiveness points to the fact that there is actually something wrong and something that they're trying to hide, which is not that unlikely. I think you said in your opening comment that many South Africans depend on these social grants. And the actual statistic is that 50% of households in the country receive at least one social grant or SRD. And 25% of households list social grants as their main source of income. So this is like a hugely important part of income for so many people. Unfortunately, as was to be expected, some people are going to find a way to steal some of that money. And so you'll see, you know, claims from people who are dead. You'll see claims from people who've got jobs. You'll see multiple claims from the same person. And these are the kinds of discrepancies that these students uncovered. And at the very least, I think they should prompt the parliamentary committee to call for an investigation into these discoveries, these findings. Nick.
Chris, what do you make of all this? I mean, the consequences of fraud on a system like this are actually, I think, quite significant. As, you know, John says, we've got this at least like a quarter of the country that relies pretty much solely on this stuff for their main income. And yet, you know, you've got people stealing from the system when South Africa is facing significant financial constraints. This is just, you know, it's not the main cause. This is not the difference between the system succeeding and crashing. But this is definitely one of those things that needs to be cleaned up if you want to actually see, the country's finances being used effectively. What do you make of this story?
Yeah, well, this research also comes to light in the context of where we'll have the next medium-term budget policy statement delivered on the 30th of October, all in the context of very tight and under pressure government finances, the fiscus perennially teetering on the edge. You've got on the one hand the state wanting to be a capable state, wanting to assist people wanting to provide whatever forms of assistance it can, but then in the administration thereof, in this particular example, not doing due diligence and indeed it being used for nefarious purposes. I mean, talking about the GNU and a new era in South African politics, where it's different from what came before. If you wanted to send the right sort of signal, you know, I'm looking forward to a sort of presidential commendation or something for these students for the work that they did. I mean, talk about you want your people, especially young South Africans, to take this level of interest and ownership of government resources, find out what's going on. Something as important as social grants, like how is it being administered, is all above board. That's the kind of thing you would want young South Africans to especially university students, to look into and to be pursuing. So let's see if that does happen. Just the point around the MPs specifically and some of the comments when you were reading, you know, those and prepping for the show, trying to read up as much as possible, the thought or the idea that comes to mind is these MPs doth protest too much, which in and of itself indicates maybe that these students have hit close to the truth, have hit the truth or close to it. And now we see what comes from it, what sort of accountability, if the allegations are indeed true, what changes can be made to ensure this sort of thing doesn't happen again. But I think an indicator, it's difficult to find these every now and then, given the barrage of difficult news we have to deal with. I'm not saying in and of itself that what has happened or is alleged to have happened is a good thing, but that it was uncovered, especially by university students, to me is a very good sign. So I hope that it is built upon and used.
Yeah, one of the points these students wanted to make actually was, you know, their kind of whole shtick here was, we're not experts. We're, you know, just learning about this stuff. And yet we were able to get all sorts of information that we shouldn't have been able to get out of the system, which doesn't seem to have even been addressed in this discussion. It was all about the fraud stuff. You know, if someone had malevolent intent, well, it's very clear that the system would be quite easy to hack, it seems. John, any final thoughts on this one before we move on?
Well, I think for me, the key point really is that I'm hoping to see a change at some point in the response that the ANC gives to corruption allegations, to uncoverings of malfeasance and fraud, which should be kind of obvious. So it's a bit disappointing to see the ANC remaining with its old style rather than changing to a new format.
Indeed. Speaking of the ANC, let's stick to a story that's a couple of weeks old, but has had some sort of interesting developments bubbling away under the surface. And this is, those of you who are following the news closely will remember a sort of one of these kind of school-based alleged racism rows, where a number of high school girls at Pretoria Girls High School were accused of racism in a WhatsApp group. Now, this thing seemed to be being dealt with kind of internally inside the school until the Gauteng Department of Education, which is Panyaza Lusufi's old post before he became the premier, became involved, and it blew up into a whole social media thing with lots of government officials declaring that they are going to, you know, hunt down the racists and promising lots of investigations into racism in the school. And then the whole case kind of fell apart because it's turned out there wasn't really a lot of evidence, due process wasn't being followed. And in fact, the girls were all pretty much innocent or were cleared by an internal investigation. When the internal investigation clearing the girls was put out by the school governing body, the department said that it was disappointed in this finding, but would continue some sort of broad general investigation into a culture of racism that was not particularly substantiated. Well, what was interesting about this is that relatively recently, Thabo Mbeki, former president, released a letter, a 13-page letter, which was extremely damning of how the Gauteng Education Department had covered the whole issue. And in fact, basically said that there was no real evidence here and that this was all kind of a witch hunt and had damaged race relations. Teachers who spoke to the Daily Maverick talking about what things were like inside the school. This is a quote from the teacher who is anonymous. It has been a really challenging time for all of us, especially for the girls. Many of them came to me asking, ma'am, what can we do? How can we fix this? Many of us have done things we're not proud of in our youth. They are just kids. They deserve the chance to be taken themselves and make mistakes. They have shown remarkable maturity through the whole situation, contrary to how it has been portrayed in the media. It isn't as bad as it seemed. The girls love each other. They have formed incredible connections and have been supporting each other through all. A parent who attends the school anonymously told the Daily Maverick that mothers and fathers of all races recently bribed together at a spring fair at the school and helped out at the food stands. Girls talked and laughed. There was not even a hint of racial tension. Our school governing boards are the only thing standing in the way of this happening. The government officials simply do not care about the future of our country. Now, what's interesting here about Thabo Mbeki's involvement is I suspect that the reason he decided to bash Lesufi is perhaps because this is an ANC internal battle that is unfortunately being played out in the public sphere in this particular school. And I think Lesufi's conduct here has created an opening for some of his opponents within the ANC to go after him. John, let me start with you again. Do you think there's any credibility to what I just said? I mean, do you agree or not?
Yeah, I think you're on the right track there, Nick. And what we're seeing here with the Pretoria High School for Girls story, I think, is that Phanyaza Lesufi was treading in the well-worn path of finding racism even where none exists. And that was the outcome of the investigation at that school, was that there had been no racism. Those allegations were dismissed effectively. But as you said, the Gauteng Education Department then said, okay, well, we're disappointed at that, but we better go and dig and find some racism. There's got to be some at least. And what this is reflective of, I think, is the critical race theory way of looking at the world, which is where you say that, you know, racism is all-pervasive, it pervades all of society, all the space around us, and it's everywhere. And even when you can't see it, it's still there. And if you look a bit harder, you're going to find it. And so if you've bought into that worldview, there's like not a single situation where two people of different races interact into which you cannot read racism. And that is the mindset with which this department is going after the school and other schools as well. So that's the basic point of outset, the point of departure. The broader political context, as you said, is that we've got the ANC working with the GNU at national level. Not everybody in the ANC is happy with that. And the people opposing this cooperation with the DA are using racism as one of the levers to try to break the DA out of the GNU, and also to crack the ANC along the fault line of the moderates, if you want to call it that, and sort of the more race nationalist crowd. That is the tactic. And Phanyaza Lesufi is making his play as one of the leaders of this radical movement. In Gauteng, as the head of the provincial government, and through his influence in the metros, to try to get his side to win the battle within the ANC. Pretoria High School for Girls is one example of this. But his ploy is to rally the troops around his flag, around the Witgevaar message, where you can say, you know, it's the whites are everywhere, their racism is everywhere, you've got to fight them everywhere you see them. And that's what he's trying to do. I think his hand is maybe not the strongest, because part of what he needs to do to be successful is for governance in the Gauteng metros to be turned around, right? So he's saying, look, here's us in the ANC working together with the EFF. It's going great. There's no conflict. This is, you know, a serious partner that you can do business with. And watch us turn around the terrible state of Johannesburg, Ekurhuleni, Tshwane. And on the back of that, he's going to make his pitch for president of the ANC in 2027. But what are his chances of turning around governance? I think they're not very good. And so in this case as well, with Thabo Mbeki entering the fray, I think that Phanyaza Lesufi is on a bit of a hiding to nothing, hopefully, and that we see his almost panicked reaction to the Thabo Mbeki letter, where it says we're arranging meetings to, you know, sort this out, is reflective of that. I think he's not on strong grounds.
So just two things I want to say here. The first is that, you know, Thabo Mbeki was unfortunately the architect, I think, of many of the sort of the racialization of South Africa's debate in the post-94 world. You know, he liberally played the race card, although at times he wouldn't. He would kind of pull back but he wasn't afraid to kind of declare that, you know, the white media was attacking the ANC or something like that. So this is, for me, a little bit of a redemption arc that he's kind of, you know, going back to some of these issues and, you know, being fair-minded and looking at the facts and actually saying, hey, this is junk. But the other thing I think worth mentioning, and Chris, you can comment on what I just said, but also your thoughts on this one, is this is one of the reasons why we oppose the Bella Bill, this amendment to the Basic Education Act. And I think that comment from that parent really summed it up. One of the things the Bella Bill does is that it takes power away from school governing boards on a whole range of issues and places them with the provincial department. If the Bella Bill had been in force when this thing happened, the department would have been running the whole thing and the school governing board would not have been able to protect these students essentially from a kind of political witch hunt. Chris, your thoughts?
I think your Bella point cuts across lots of other policies and legislation on the table. Things like the NHI jump to mind, where let's assume best knowledge, best intentions, best capabilities on the part of bureaucrats and politicians have all knowledge of all society, how people interact with each other. If you don't have these checks and balances and oversight, different categories of responsibility, and, you know, get too philosophical, but that principle of subsidiarity cutting across government and private sector and civil society, where they sort of check on each other. If you don't have those informing legislation and policy, then you concentrate the risk all the more in one party or in the hands of a few individuals. So in the case of the NHI, you give the minister the power to appoint members on the board of the NHI fund. If that minister for any reason decides, you know, he'll favor his friends, then you allocate the country's, all the country's healthcare resources to one or two individuals. Same now with education. If you don't have checks and balances, breaks on control and power, you open up incentives and more room for abuse from bureaucrats, from the politicians at the very center, who might then use that power in very destructive ways. I did find it noteworthy, just specifically this week, talking about local governance issues in Gauteng, a meeting between the Department of Water and Sanitation and Rand Water earlier this week. The Minister of Water and Sanitation, Pemi Majordina, she really cut to the chase in terms of service delivery of water, specifically in Gauteng, as putting the responsibility on municipalities, fixing leaks, getting things sorted. So you're seeing this contestation and the messaging from different national and provincial departments around where the issue lies, where the premier that we're talking about, he has, for example, on the water issue said, well, it's a national concern. It's a national responsibility. It's not for the provincial department to try and fix water delivery, water service problems. So, I think it's illustrative, as we mentioned, of this wider battle within the ANC towards 2027. It'll be noteworthy to see how it plays out. And for parties like the DA and others, where they decide to engage and not, because the overall strategy will be to get the DA out of the GNU. If the DA in its assessment sees that being part of the GNU continues to be good for itself and for the country, not engaging in some of these issues and on some of the terms that are set by their opponents, but where they decide to engage, where they decide to fight the battles with trying to influence others within the ANC, others in other parties, to continue the GNU project through to 2029 and possibly even later, that it's not all broken up in 2027, regardless of who the ANC president might be. So lots of, I guess, interlocked complex issues, but it is illustrative of just how high stakes it is in education and in this case service delivery when you do have so much government power, resources concentrated. It's just going to up the stakes for political parties to try and influence it accordingly.
John, any final thoughts before we move on?
Yeah, I think I broadly agree with Chris. So this point about centralization being the natural instinct of the ANC is accurate. We see that in all sorts of policy initiatives, and it's reflected here as well with the Bella Bill, where it centralizes power in the hands of the head of the Department of Education at provincial level, rather than decentralizing it to the school governing board. That's a problem.
Indeed. All right, let's move on to the story. And this is, I think, probably the final one we're going to talk on this, because we've talked about it a bit already this week. But I've been very concerned by what seemed to me to be kind of a bit of a social media-driven witch hunt or targeting foreigners in South Africa. This is after a number of food poisoning cases, and the most recent one was when a number of kids died, allegedly because of chips they ate from a spaza shop, which was owned by foreigners. Now, while there has been at least a bit of evidence, an actual investigation being released with regards to this, you know, we're still unclear on a whole bunch of details. The Department of Health has now come out and said that these kids died from contamination by a chemical agent, but it's not entirely clear, I think, whether that was in fact from the shop that has been accused. This whole thing has sparked the kind of anti-foreigner thing where people are accusing foreigners of poisoning South African children and going around and, you know, there have been attacks on foreign-owned shops. In some places, the authorities have pretty much cooperated rather than trying to control the riots and the attacks on shops and the looting of them. They've just ordered all foreign-owned shops in some parts of the country, like Sharpeville, to be shut down at least temporarily, if not permanently, which seems kind of entirely illegal. Anyway, the Gauteng Police Commissioner told the media on Thursday, so after a lot of the sort of the department had gotten involved and promised all sorts of actions against foreign shops, that we have forensic results from the labs which clearly indicate that the cause is carbamates, which is a bait that kills insects. Now, once again, it's not been established that these kids actually got that from the spaza shop, but during some raids on spaza shops in Naledi in Soweto, they found that some of these spaza shops were in fact using this powerful, it seems to be a Chinese brand. The packaging in the media story was like insecticide covered in Chinese characters. So apparently this stuff is illegal, but is used by a lot of poor people because it is extremely effective. And so you can kill a lot of insects without having to spend a lot of money. Unfortunately, if this gets into the food, it can be poisonous. So this may have, in fact, been the cause of these kids' death. We still don't know, however. The health department person speaking to the Daily Maverick said that these highly poisonous and banned forms of pest control are not only used in spaza shops, but in households as well. However, the department did not have the capacity to inspect every household in the province. Communities prefer these banned pesticides because they are very effective compared to normal ones which are sold on shelves. We asked them where they get the substances. They all have different stories. Once we are able to track the supply and charge them for illegally selling a banned substance, then we'll be able to deal with access to the community. But once again here, you know, the problems kind of all seem to be stuff relating to, you know, the sort of larger issues of people being poor and just kind of, you know, like bad hygiene in these areas, those kind of things, rather than specifically a problem with foreign-owned shops. And what's really frustrated me about all of this is that a lot of the reporting on this kind of made these allusions and kind of connected foreigners to this whole, to these poisoning incidents without any evidence. And in fact, government's response was that too. John, what do you make of this? I mean, I'm glad that we're finally getting some actual details on this now, but I must say that a lot of the media reporting and social media stuff on this has not exactly been a wonderful thing to watch.
I think, like, at the outset, you know, just to think for a moment about the six kids who died, and you know how absolutely terrible this is. They were sort of between 6 and 9 years old. That's utterly shocking. And, you know, obviously the authorities should put every effort into identifying the cause of their death and combating that cause. That should go without saying. But I think that in the Daily French on Monday, you together with Michael and Sarah really teased apart very thoroughly your concern about the reporting on this, which often seems tendentious and deploys correlation in support of arguments that are not directly linked, like anti-foreigner sentiment, for example. And I'm reading the story which you shared with us earlier, and even here I still get a bit of a sense of, like, is this clear now? So ultimately what you want to see is, you know, authorities have done autopsies, they've confirmed that the cause of death was poisoning, they've confirmed what the agent was, they've confirmed that the source of contamination was the chips which the kids ate. It's like you need to know these things. What we see here is They say after the children died after eating chips from a local spaza shop that authorities determined were contaminated by a chemical agent. And further down, we have results from the labs which clearly indicate that the cause is carbamates, which is this insecticide. Supposedly, I assume this means the link is established. But we also see in the same article that the investigation from these health department officials finds traces of carbamates in two spaza shops in the area. So not even necessarily the same ones. So it's still quite tenuous. And I think it would be good of the authorities and of journalists to exercise more restraint and report on the basis of fact rather than correlation, speculation, or motivated reasoning. Nick?
I see someone in the comments has just called me a broccoli vegetable. yeah, so, you know.
Many aspire to the title. Very few achieve it.
I know. It's the best of the vegetables, actually, if you think about it. But that being said, I think what the real problem with this whole issue has been the sort of, it was kind of all backwards loaded. There was essentially a rumor, there was a suspicion, and lots of action and promises were taken without thorough investigation. And we're still kind of seeing that, you know, specific shops and specific people should be investigated. And if they have done illegal things, which in this case, there seems to be at least some evidence that there may have been some, you know, illegal stuff going on here, then action must be taken. But a sort of blanket, we're just going to sort of, you know, everyone's going to be inspected now and we're going to target the foreigners specifically. I mean, you know, I'm pretty sure that you're going to find that most shops in poor areas are probably using substances like these for economic reasons, which is that this stuff is cheaper and more effective than buying lots of other insecticide. Chris, any thoughts on this?
Just two mainly. Number one, if you do then decide to go that route of investigating everything under the sun, then it risks becoming more of a show by the authorities and a perception of action versus where there is proof and then the authorities put the necessary resources to it. If there's prosecution, etc., then it's much more effective in that regard. If it's just a show every few months, it's a hit, it's an investigation here, yeah. It's the sort of, you know, scattershot approach, I don't think that's the right sort of...
Exactly. You need a systemic response, not a sort of flash in the pan kind of thing, if you want to actually solve some of these issues. And of course, the underlying problem with all of this is poverty,
right?
And bad governance. If these areas didn't have leaking sewer pipes because the municipality hasn't fixed them in 6 months, if these areas had streets where the rubbish was picked up on time every single week, if you had... you know, proper organization, even of informal settlements, when you have you can organize informal settlements so that it's neater and that it's not so clustered and it's not overgrown and it's got electricity and all these kind of things. You can start to get rid of things like pests and insects and rats and that kind of stuff. But when you just have chaos, this is kind of the inevitable result. John, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. You know, so governance breakdowns have cascading effects, you know. So if you can't maintain sanitation infrastructure or the elements needed for hygiene, you know, then there's very many things that are dangerous to people. The entirety of this infrastructure is designed or is meant to help people stay safe from those kinds of threats. So I hope the authorities find out what caused it, and then, you know, pinpoint the cause and go after it, and don't blanket cover the entire area with allegations of foreigners trying to kill kids.
No, exactly. And that's what some of the worst social media stuff has been claiming, is not that this was even necessarily, you know, slapdash cutting corners, that this was some sort of deliberate nefarious plot to murder South African children, which is clearly definitely not the case. All right. That's all the time we have for the episode today. We hope you found the show interesting. We will be back next week. I hope you all have a wonderful one. Cheers. Have a good day.